You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on February 12, 1988.
In the course of a year, I get to do some interesting things, some of which I choose and some of which choose me. In the latter category is the assignment to do a series of slide sets on Oswego County wetlands. It's the last topic in particular that I wanted to comment on, wetlands and the water cycle. How do you make such a topic meaningful to fourth through sixth graders? I thought about that a little while and decided that I'd have to find a way to get each student personally involved. What better way than to have each one become a raindrop and thereby enter into the water cycle, experiencing such things as evaporation, condensation, and precipitation, along the way to be responsible for a bit of erosion and to have contact with some of the less salubrious elements in the environment. The more I worked with the idea, the more impressed I was with the genius of the water cycle. It's a mechanism worldwide that transcends human conceptions. The power unit of the water cycle is the sun. This machinery is really found in the properties of H2O taken twice, the basic molecule of water, and to the three states it can assume. As a liquid, it's the great diluter, the great propeller, the great inundator. It is without peer as a supporter of life. In its gaseous form, it's the great traveler, again, the great transporter, even the great nourisher. Why, if water vapor did nothing else but form clouds as it condenses on little dust particles in the air, most of us would be willing to grant it acceptance. What a scattering of cirrus or altocumulus or cumulonimbus can do to a sunset is quite enough. At sunrise and sunset, the unity of those biological and physical processes associated with the water cycle is dramatically portrayed. At such a time, the fire in the clouds is reflected in the glassy surface of a pond with an afterglow that shines forth from the vaporous mists that rise from the pond and the dew-drenched fields. The wonder doesn't cease at this point either. In certain seasons, water droplets become ice crystals, miracles of lacy symmetry. They fall to the ground, cloaking a stark winter landscape with a transforming, beautifying mantle. With time, snow becomes ice, and another miracle appears. In its solid form, water becomes the great insulator, the abrader, the barrier. But it is also the means by which great quantities of moisture can be stored to await the spring release. When the sun imparts its wake-up message to the plants of forest, field, and wetland, it draws upon this moisture bank account to provide the waters of regeneration. Of course, I wouldn't attempt to impart all of these thoughts to fourth graders, many of whom may not be ready to care yet, but I would want to pass along the thought that for all of its otherworldly genius, the water cycle has its Achilles heel. Its Achilles heels, actually. As water vaporizes and rises into the air, it leaves behind a variety of contaminants with which it has become associated during its earthbound journey. They don't evaporate, but as the vapor rises and cools and seeks out dust particles on which to condense in its cloud-forming phase, it seldom finds totally inert and benign nuclei of condensation. Increasingly in this age, it incorporates noxious substances, and it carries them with it on its journey back to Earth. Plain H2O can become a caustic, noxious brew capable of destroying great stone works of art, even that supreme work of art, the wetland, in the process. As the water travels over the Earth, its properties as a great commoner of solvents allows it to incorporate all manner of other chemicals with it, so that the spring freshet, which replenishes the wetland, is no longer the pristine bath it once was. The wetland, in attempting to fulfill its role as the chemical and physical purifier, becomes a repository of a great deal of ugly and ominous substance, with which it slowly invests the water table, like a ticking time bomb. That's why Love Canal has become a generic rather than a specific term in just a few years. It's rather a sad thought, isn't it, that anything so beautiful can be so vulnerable? But that's the way it is with works of art. They embody or engender sensitivity. You know, I wish I could get the president's environmental advisors to sit in an elementary classroom and listen to the comments of sixth graders as they review these slide sets. I have a lot of confidence in the value judgments of sixth graders. They're largely very real and not easily programmable, either by political expedience or by environmental slide sets. I'd hate to think we're going to continue to use the genius of the water cycle to devastate forests, sterilize lakes, and make love canals of critical wetlands. Let's unite to return the water cycle to its primary purpose and pristine state. That's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.